Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway and special guest Dr. John Sloop to talk about what some people are calling the most important election of our lifetime. The three of us bring unique perspectives to this issue. John is a pastor and Bible scholar, Rita is a constitutional lawyer, and I as a former diplomat with 26 years of government experience. But let's be honest about this. It's hard to think of any election that could possibly be more important than the one that was held exactly 2 years ago in the contest between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. At that time, many of us were frustrated. We faced a choice between a leap into certain darkness with no hope, and yet, on the other hand, a leap into uncertain darkness with only a glimmer of hope. Now, I'll leave it to you to decide which leap refers to which candidate. In any event, the outcome of that election surprised all of us, and the results over the past 2 years have also surprised us even more, for better or for worse, depending on your point of view. Sadly, that election and the one we are facing on Tuesday have exposed very sharp differences between us in so many ways, perhaps even greater now than they were 2 years ago. We are indeed a divided nation. And as the Bible says, a kingdom divided against itself will be brought to ruin and cannot stand. And that is why on Tuesday, we must all come together again as one nation under God to vote our biblical values. And that is what our program today is all about. Now, just a moment by way of review. You, our listeners, may recall that 2 weeks ago, Rita and I reported on the huge differences that exist between the two-party platforms. Then last week, with John's help, we took a very different approach as we tried to look at all of this through the eyes of Jesus. How would he vote if he were here today? So today, we'll take another quick look at those two programs and then wrap it up by encouraging everyone to vote your values on Tuesday because it matters. But before we begin, I need to say this. As a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization, the Valley Family Forum does not endorse any party or any specific candidate for public office. If that is what you're looking for today, you will be disappointed. Instead, as we always do, we will measure each party and each candidate against the transcendent Judeo-Christian values and constitutional principles on which America was founded and has prospered. That is both our heritage and the key to our future. So let's begin by asking two questions. Why does it matter who controls the Senate and the House after the election on Tuesday? And if it does, how should we vote? Rita, get us started.
Well, Dean, I first want to welcome John back to our Crossroads program. And you know, I call John Doc because he's Dr. John Sloop.
And you're young enough to be one of my grandchildren who call me Doc.
I wasn't going to say it, but since you pointed out, yes. So, Doc, welcome back to Crossroads. And to begin by picking up on comments you made at the very end of our program last week regarding the need for everyone to vote on Tuesday, remind us, why is that so important?
Well, it's great to be back, Rita and Dean. Well, you know, it's important for people to vote because it's our civic duty, first of all, and I think it's a Christian duty as Christian citizens. But I think we need to begin, as Dean did, by recalling the 2016 election and then comparing the record of the last 2 years under Trump against the 8 years that preceded it under President Obama. That alone will help us understand why voting is so important. Now, whether you like the outcome of that election or not, the point is that our world and our country today under President Trump is significantly different from what it would have been under a Hillary Clinton presidency. Let me mention just a few of the highlights from the past 2 years that reflect a return to the Judeo-Christian values of life and faith, family and freedom that had been abandoned by President Obama. First on life, from day one of his presidency, Trump showed that he was going to be a pro-life president by restoring the Mexico City ban on funding overseas abortion programs and by trying to defund Planned Parenthood. And in contrast to that, President Obama had supported these programs throughout his presidency. Secondly, on freedom. President Trump has also placed a much greater emphasis on religious liberty, including getting three prisoners freed from prisons in North Korea, and also recently freeing Pastor Andrew Brunson from prison in Turkey. These are major accomplishments. And in contrast, President Obama appeared comparatively indifferent to their plight and placed much more emphasis on promoting LGBTQ rights at home and abroad. Now, as a pastor, I just want to say that on these two issues in particular, pastors should take the pulpits and preach these values forcefully and unashamedly, and calling congregations to do their civic duty and vote this Tuesday. President Trump also appointed former Kansas Governor Sam Brownback, who is a committed follower of Jesus, as our ambassador at large for international religious freedom. Now, this position was left vacant under President Obama. Also, President Trump convened and hosted for the very first time what is known as the International Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom. And that was attended by delegates from over 80 countries concerned about religious liberty. This, again, presents a significant contrast with President Obama, who seemed to ignore the ways in which Christians were being persecuted overseas.
Well, thank you, John. That's an important review. And Rita, I know that this issue of freedom is very important to you. So what other changes have you seen in the past 2 years, either on specific cases or also on how the courts themselves have been changed?
Well, Dean, first, I think it's important for us to point out, yes, we are aware we're not voting in this election for President Trump or President Obama, but all of this is relevant in showing what's at stake every time we go to the polls. And I think it is important, as Doc has said, to look at this against the background of the past 8 years. Everywhere we look, we see a rise in the threats to religious freedom within our culture. The way people even think about religious freedom has changed. And in the courts, the way courts are weighing religious liberty against the so-called sexual liberty is really alarming and should be a concern to us. Christians are being persecuted and prosecuted for their faith. And these include small business owners, educators, military personnel, civic leaders, and many more. Really, in every area of society, we see this threat and sort of harassment of Christians. Now, while some of those cases are still under court review, we have seen some favorable decisions that give us hope that maybe things are turning around, we're going to move in the right direction. Like, for instance, the ruling in favor of baker Jack Phillips and Masterpiece Cake Shop. But remember, that ruling left a lot yet to be decided in the future. It's not a clear sort of perpetual victory for religious liberty. These things are still at stake. But I think the important point here is that this is a major issue facing our nation today, and we need to consider carefully the candidates' positions on religious liberty when we go to the polls. So that's my perspective. Doc, what else would you say makes this election and our vote so important?
As I see it, Rita, it really boils down to the question of who holds power in the Senate and in the House of Representatives. It's just a simple fact that if the Democrats win control of the Senate, Chuck Schumer will become the leader. And Chuck and his senators will do all they can to block future court appointments for constitutionally conservative judges. That's so important to them because the Democrats relied on liberal activist judges to legislate from the bench on issues where they simply can't get approval through the normal legislative process. Now, in addition, if the House goes Democrat, that means Nancy Pelosi will be the leader, and we know her positions, and they will try to block and even to reverse many of Trump's decisions. And that would include, for example, trying to restore parts of Obama's LGBT agenda, which included following self-identified transgender boys to use girls' restrooms and locker rooms.
I know that some of our listeners may be asking how we can be so sure that many of these achievements of the past 2 years will be in jeopardy if the Democrats win control of either the Senate or the House on Tuesday. And therefore, Rita, maybe we should do a quick review for our listeners of how the two-party platforms differ on these core Judeo-Christian values and programs, because that is what guides the two parties.
You know, Dean, I suspect that there aren't a lot of people today who actually take the time to read what's in these party platforms. But as our listeners may recall, you and I did a very careful study of each party platform that they adopted 2 years ago in the lead up to the presidential election. What we discovered was that there really are stark differences between the two parties on some pretty basic moral values and governing principles. For example, on the issue of life, Republicans are pro-life. In contrast, the Democrats believe that abortion is a legitimate choice that women should be legally permitted to make. On marriage, the Republicans define marriage as between only one man and one woman. The Democrats support same-sex marriage, really a redefinition of the whole institution of marriage. On religious freedom, the Republicans commit to defending religious freedom. The Democrats talk about religious freedom for minorities, but certain parts of their platform seem to indicate that they believe that LGBT rights should have priority over religious beliefs and freedoms. Mm-hmm. That is really a change. Yes. On government, the Republicans stand for limits on federal government power, the constitutional limits that we have. And Republicans want to put more power in the hands of the state and the individual, as stated in the Constitution. Again, in contrast, the Democrats support a larger and more powerful federal government that acts as sort of a provider of the things that people need and want. And if you have any doubt about this, you can review the two platforms yourself or go to our website and listen to our program on this again. And it's available at valleyfamilyforum.org/crossroads radio show. Click on the link to Crossroads, and it's the program dated October 21st.
You know, Rita, this is so vital and another good resource. I know Dean and I love this magazine. It is the Billy Graham Association magazine, Decision, the Evangelical Voice for Today. And they always have issues that outline the clear differences between the two parties.
Yeah. Doc, what other ways can you talk about that this vote is so important?
Well, the fact is that many of the elections for Senate and the House are just razor-thin close. All of the 435 House seats are up for vote, and one-third or 33 of the 100 Senate seats are also up. Therefore, any one of these seats could swing the balance of power toward one party or the other. It's so close already. In addition, 36 of the 50 governorships are also up for grabs. And that brings us to the point of voter turnout. And our role as Christians to be values voters. The evangelical vote comprises one of the largest voting blocks in the country. However, by some estimates, only half of evangelicals are registered to vote. And sadly, of them, only half actually do go out and vote. So the evangelicals really can swing this thing. And therefore, we want to encourage each of you who are listening, who are God-fearing, Bible-believing folks, to encourage your friends, your neighbors, and family members to vote on Tuesday. I got my son to vote absentee ballot because he's going to go out of town. And I told him, now, David, go and text all your friends and encourage all those young people to vote as well. And in addition to that, we need to just be praying. Pray that God's will be done in this election. We need to remind them that in our democratic form of government, we the people are the government and have a God-given responsibility to elect godly leaders who will write and to enforce our laws. If we neglect that Christian duty, we leave the door open for others to take their places. So Christians must be involved. Now, for the bottom line, even though we can't endorse political parties or individual candidates, we can offer two simple steps for making wise decisions at the ballot box. First of all, determine for yourself which of the two parties more closely reflects your core Judeo-Christian beliefs and values on the issues of life, faith, family, and freedom. Secondly, for individual candidates, go to their websites to find out what they believe. For example, at the national level, we have two races in Virginia, one for the U.S. Senate and the other is for the House of Representatives. So, Dean, I know we can't endorse candidates, but can you spell out who is running for those two positions and some clues about what they believe and what they stand for?
Yeah, John, like the party platforms that Rita was talking about, this too is pretty simple. Let's start with the Senate. We have Democrat Tim Kaine running against Republican Corey Stewart. These will appear on our ballots on Tuesday. I went to several sources to find out what their thinking is about these candidates. The American Family Association, for example, describes Tim Kaine as very liberal and Corey Stewart as a conservative. Now, by that, I think we can assume that they adhere to the party platform issues that Rita was talking about. But specifically on some of these issues, for example, the American Family Association reports that Corey Stewart is strongly pro-life, strongly pro-marriage between only one man and one woman, and strongly supportive of religious freedom. In contrast, Tim Kaine declined to answer any of the AFA survey questions, and that alone speaks volumes. But his website indicates that he personally opposes abortion, but he doesn't believe that government should interfere with a woman's right to choose.
That was Teddy Kennedy's view as well.
That just strikes me as curious. I'm personally opposed to murder.
Yeah.
But the government really shouldn't interfere in our right to go out and kill somebody.
It's a totally inconsistent point of view.
And as a result, Tim Kaine supports Roe v. Wade and also supports the Supreme Court decision to legalize same-sex marriage. A big contrast between the two candidates. Now, in the House race, Republican Ben Klein is pitted against Jennifer Lewis. That is in the 6th Congressional District, the seat that is being vacated by Congressman Bob Goodlatte. Once again, the American Family Association describes Klein as very conservative, that is in support of the issues that are embodied in the Republican Party platform, and describes Lewis as liberal, again, in support of the Democratic Party platform positions. Specifically, Klein expresses himself as very strongly pro-life. Lewis is strongly pro-abortion, or pro-choice, as they would say. Both candidates can be assumed to support all of their party's other platform positions. So when you see a D, then you know that they're supporting the positions that Rita just described. If you see an R, then you can assume the same thing about Ben Klein, and for example. One more thing, John. I recall that last week, in the discussion about how Jesus would vote, you had a very useful suggestion that we all take this suggestion to the polls on Tuesday. Can you repeat that for us?
As I shared last week in How Would Jesus Vote, I really liked Rita's nuance and distinction that the question should really be, how would Jesus have us to vote? But I sort of tongue-in-cheek said that Jesus would vote his conscience. And of course, his was a divine conscience. But then I suggested that we would know how Jesus would want us to vote because it's revealed to us in Scripture. We must vote our consciences as our consciences are guided by divine revelation found in Scripture. And this really fits into everything that we've been talking about today. First of all, voting my biblically informed conscience means that I will vote only for candidates who understand that life begins at conception and who are committed to protecting it from that point. I said in the panel at VMRC that I can simply not trust a candidate who gets it wrong on life. Secondly, it means that I will vote for candidates who understand God's revealed design for marriage, that it is exclusively between one man and one woman in a covenant for life. Finally, it means that I will vote for all candidates who understand and are willing to protect my freedom to exercise my religious beliefs. In other words, candidates who do not promote the misconception about this so-called wall of separation, but clearly understand what the First Amendment means in the establishment cause. Those are all biblical values. Therefore, in simplest forms, it means that we should all vote biblically on Tuesday. And as I said earlier, encourage your friends, your neighbors, and your family members to do likewise. This is a must.
Thank you, Doc. I would just like to add to your list of the values that I think are important.
You may certainly do that.
Thank you. That are important to Christians as they go to the polls. And it's this whole issue of caring for the poor, the sick, and the needy. I know this is something that figures prominently in the minds of most Christians when they consider how they're going to vote. And sometimes it seems like we have this choice between a candidate who wants to protect life from conception, understands what the institution of marriage means as God created it, and wants to protect religious freedom on the one hand, and then on the other hand, candidates who seem more concerned about caring for the poor, the sick, and the needy. So I am sympathetic to that, and I just like to share the way I work through that for myself is to go back to what is the role of government. And I'd like to encourage listeners to consider that as they think about how they're going to cast their votes. You know, you wouldn't choose the best candidate for a job without thinking about, well, what is the role of this position in the company?
Right.
You know, it makes all the difference in the world. And I would submit that the same thing goes for public officials. You need to think about what is the role of government in our society. Now, if you're someone who believes that it's the role of the government to be a provider, like I mentioned earlier, then maybe the Democrats are the ones that you want to put into office. But just be aware as you do that, that this is a difference from what our founders envisioned as the role of government. And I would submit it's different from what God says is the role of government, what we learn about the reason for civil government in the Bible. And not only that, but when we're talking about the federal government, it would even seem to require constitutional change because our Constitution is written giving the federal government only certain enumerated, limited powers. So those are things to keep in mind. Do you have any comment, thoughts on that? Do you agree that that's something that figures big in the minds of Christians as they go to the polls?
Well, Rita, I certainly do agree. And I think it's a reminder, too, that there are some issues that are very clearly black and white with reference to biblical teaching on these issues. And as John just described, we're looking at the issue of sanctity of life. We're looking at marriage as God's design for marriage is between one man and one woman. And we're looking at religious freedom. You remember the disciples were told they should not speak anymore, and they went to prison as a result or were martyred for it. These are very clear biblical teaching. What you're talking about is our Constitution, and we're not considering that as necessarily the Word of God.
Right.
It can be amended. And there's room for some differences of opinion. But that, too, as you've described it, is very clear on the 10th Amendment to the Constitution. It talks about the federal government being very limited to enumerated powers.
Right.
And so I'm just saying that for our voters, there is latitude on some of these issues, whether it's environment, whether it's climate change, whether it's any number of things, there are a range for differences of opinion. Yeah. But on the biblical values that we have been talking about, it is very clear, and that's what we mean, that we should go and vote our values on Tuesday.
I wanted to just throw one more issue out for consideration, and it's this whole issue of not voting. We know what a big problem this is, and Doc, you even gave us some statistics to show us how pitiful Christians as a whole are when it comes to voter turnout. And it's really appalling to me that that is the case. And I want to share that the way I look at it, this whole issue of, you know, do I need to vote? And what if I'm not really a big fan of either of the candidates I get to choose from? Well, to me, it's an issue of stewardship.
Yeah.
When you are a Christian and you have the privilege of being an American citizen and being able to choose your leaders, those who will make our laws and enforce our laws, that is a resource that we need to steward well. And I just would ask people to remember that and to go out and vote. And think about the U.S. Supreme Court when you vote. We are so grateful for the addition this year of Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh, but it's possible that there will be one or two more vacancies coming up in the next couple of years. So we need more constitutional conservatives who will judge strictly by the written words of the Constitution rather than by their personal ideology. For that, we also need a majority of senators who will consider candidates fairly on their merit and their experience rather than by their own political bias, as we saw happen with Judge Kavanaugh. Well, our time is up. Doc, thank you so much for being with us again today, and also to all of our listeners for joining us. If you would like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, go to our website at valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We want to thank our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the dental practice of Scott Dunaway, and also to so many of you for your prayers, your encouragement, and your financial support. If you would like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia 22803. I'm Rita Dunaway with Dean Welty, our special guest Dr. John Sloop, and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. At that time, we'll be taking the wraps off of a big surprise that you won't want to miss.
Woo-hoo!
Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action.
Rejoice, 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 rej